Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 133. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee? Well, that son of a gun is still over in Spain right now. Just living the life, man. Seeing the pictures going up on Instagram and Facebook and all his social media. He's just out there chilling, man. Just having a good time. Kind of a crazy time in Spain. The dude planned a vacation about a year in advance, man. Got a super cheap airfare and then looks like they're having some civil unrest over there in Barcelona, but looks like he avoided the civil unrest for the most part and just found himself some frosty beverages and some beautiful sights, and it looks like he's having a good time. So my man Cole Coffee is wrapping up his vacation, but I will say he's volunteered to edit all this bad boy and put it together, so once we finish talking some MMA, I'm going to ship everything over to him, and he's actually the one that's going to cut everything together. I tried to learn. I volunteered. I said I would learn to do this. I said, hey, brother, teach me your ways, my friend, and I will edit it, but he's got commitment to the craft. I think he just doesn't trust me is what it boils down to. The dude does not trust me to get things done the right way. He's kind of a perfectionist like that, so I think that's why he volunteered to do it. So he's going to do that, and then actually he's going to do it right before he heads back from Spain. He's flying back, so we'll get this thing back with the full team together. Listen, I wanted to apologize right off the bat, and it involves Cole Coffee, because I tell you, I really wanted to do episode 132 and a half. I got to get back to the half episodes. I want to talk about MMA, especially after we had such a phenomenal card like UFC 216. Man, was this thing fun, start to finish. But of course, Cole Coffee was out of town, so that meant that I was the cameraman. I was the guy in the back. I was the video guy all week long. And on fight night especially, and still wanted to talk about it. It's a little different. You know, it's different when you're watching on TV than it is up there being cage side. Man, if you go back and watch the replays of all the fun action from that night, you're going to see Simon Simano's face up there in my seat, cage side. So it's a whole different perspective, that's for sure. But it is fun to talk to those athletes. There's something pretty cool about, you know, getting that initial moment with them right after, you know, not the press conferences, but just those scrums right after. There's something kind of fun about that. So, man, I was hyped up. I wanted to talk about UFC 216, but it turns out I ended up working until about 4 o'clock in the morning on Saturday night that night, man. Cold Coffee actually it does some real work. Not having our team together changed things up a little bit, man. I'm not used to that routine. We've got our system down for covering events, and Simon Simano did a great job working hard and helped us out. But I ended up working until about 4 o'clock in the morning, and that meant no and a half for me because I was falling asleep at my computer, and I was kind of bummed about it. And then the next day, I had a big family day planned, and I just decided, you know what, one more week, I'll push it off. I'm, you know, you guys that listen, you hardcores, you know, family is incredibly important to me now more than ever, and decided, you know what, man, I've got these plans. We had two different birthday parties to go to and some other stuff going on. Say, you know what, let's just put the and a half to the side, and we'll launch it again next week. But I promise you, we're getting back on the road. I'm going to Poland next week. I'll do it from there. I'm going to go to Brazil. I'll do it from there. We'll start getting this thing back, and then, of course, UFC 217 in New York. What a fantastic card that is. But I did want to talk briefly about UFC 216. I know by now, you know, sitting down on Thursday night to record this the way we always do, it'll come out on Friday. You don't want a breakdown of UFC 216. You've already had those. Everybody's been talking about it, right? But I am still buzzing from that card, especially those top two performances. Tony Ferguson, the win over Kevin Lee. Man, what a phenomenal fight that was. Delivered on everything. Tony Ferguson looked fantastic. I mean, he is a deserving interim champion. This guy is so good, man. The pace, the pressure, the technique, the creativity, everything that Tony Ferguson does is just so fun to watch. He was fantastic on fight week. I've told you, and I stand behind it, man. This guy, I wasn't so sure about him when I first started out, man. I didn't know about this guy. The sunglasses inside, just the attitude and the way he talks and stuff, it's unique. But I love it, man. I have come to love it. I love his attitude. I love the way he carries himself. And, man, I'm a big fan of his fighting style, his camera style, everything that he does. And he is a deserving champion. Kevin Lee, Man, tough to see him. I mean, here's a Vegas guy that we have, had a cage-sized seat, so to speak, to watch his career develop. I mean, the guy's come in and hosted MMA Junkie Radio a ton of times. We've seen him fight. We've seen training sessions. We've, hell, I go to Extreme Couture quite a bit now for my son to train. And it's hard to see a guy. I mean, you end up, I mean, it's certainly not somebody I'd say I could consider, you can't say you're a friend. It's not like I've ever hung out with the guy, but you get a professional relationship with the man, and you know what it means to him. You know the type of sacrifice they put in and just how invested they are. And Kevin Lee was as invested as they come. And, to come up short in a fight like this, you saw the tears, man. You saw the tears both in the cage and afterwards as well. And it's hard, man. It's hard to see that for guys. But I think there's, a huge upside for Kevin Lee. I don't think he's going anywhere. The guy's 25 years old, man. He's not going anywhere. We're going to see him again. He'll be in future title fights and, still could be a UFC champion somewhere down the road. But Tony Ferguson is just a cut above right now. You could make the argument right now that Tony Ferguson is the best lightweight on the planet. You could absolutely make that argument. Now, the rankings that we have at MMA Junkie, of course, we've got Conor McGregor ranked at number one. And I don't have a problem with that. I really don't. I mean, the thing about guys when they move divisions especially is you can't just throw away their entire body of work in another division. And I'll be honest with you, sometimes, Gorgeous George Garcia, the host of MMA Junkie Radio, he's the one that heads up our rankings panel. We've done it for years just to kind of pull back the curtains a little bit. Every employee on staff used to have like a division that was kind of like their baby, right? That you really monitored your division. And then we all kind of gave feedback or whatever, I think mine was the bantamweight division. And you'd make changes based on fights. And the idea was just to split up the workload a little bit and to make sure, there wasn't one person overlooking something because they've got so much to worry about every week. But through time, George Garcia has proven he's like got a passion for rankings, and he kind of said, let me take this thing over. So he kind of heads up the rankings each week, and then the editors, myself, Dan Stutt, Matt Erickson, Simon Simano, we all kind of chime in with our thoughts or whatever once he offers up what he has. And so it's still a group thing, but I'll definitely say it's George's baby. I'll be honest with you, him and I sometimes, not butt heads. I mean, it's a professional, relationship, of course, but I think sometimes when guys move divisions, he has a tendency to kind of take everything away that they accomplished somewhere else. And you look at a guy, I don't know what the right example might be. I mean, maybe Rafael dos Anjos right now, welterweight Rafael dos Anjos is 12. Is that too low? I mean, does that take away what everything that he did at lightweight? I don't know. It's tough to say. I mean, Cowboy Cerrone was another one that I thought we, especially when he was in the height of that run, that I thought maybe we undervalued when he moved divisions. So, with Conor McGregor, I have no problem with him being number one at lightweight because I don't think you can just take away what he accomplished at featherweight. But Tony Ferguson, he said it. He's dead right. Conor McGregor has fought once in the UFC's lightweight division. That's crazy. That is absolutely crazy to think about. So, obviously what Conor has done, everything he's done is crazy, man. He's reinvented the sport in a lot of ways. But, to argue that he's the best lightweight in the world, it does leave the door open, right? I mean, you can't take away the pound-for-pound greatness, right? You can't argue Conor's pound-for-pound greatness because he's done it at featherweight. He's done it at welterweight. He's done it at lightweight. You can't take away from that. But to say you're the best lightweight on the planet, I think Tony Ferguson's got a little argument there. So I really, really, really hope they do this fight next. I really do. I really hope it's Tony Ferguson versus Conor McGregor. I understand that Conor McGregor versus Nate Diaz 3 is, the money fight. I get that. And there's no question about it. It would do better. If I'm being honest, just straight up as a businessman and all I'm worried about is dollars and cents, then yeah. Yeah, you do Conor McGregor, Nate 3. And that sucks, but that's true. That's what the casual fan will care more about because they know those two names, they know the rivalry, and they don't necessarily know Tony Ferguson yet, which is a damn shame. This was an amazing win over Kevin Lee. The performance against Rafael Dos Anjos, the five rounds in Mexico City. Come on, man. Surviving against Lando Venata, winning that. Hell of a fight with Edson Barboza. I mean, the performances go back. And I think this is the right fight to make. Not to mention just the whole point of having two titles, the interim title, the lightweight. You got to unify the titles. It just makes the whole sport look ridiculous if you got Tony Ferguson out here defending his belt. And he says he will. He's like, dude, if Conor doesn't want me, I'll just keep defending this belt. And I believe him. I think he will. He wants to keep fighting. He wants to stay busy. But you can't do it, man. You got to put that fight together. You got to put that fight together. Now, here's the weird thing. Adi Attar, Paradigm Sports Management, manages both these guys. Now, Adi is a stand-up dude, man. He's as good as they come. He's professional. He shoots you straight. I don't think he's, you know, going to do anything, quote-unquote, shady, so to speak. But if you were managing both these guys, wouldn't you recommend they stay apart from each other? You don't want one of your guys to lose, right? You don't want one of your guys to lose. So I don't know. I hope that it's a help, that it'll make the fight happen quicker because they're managed by the same guy, not that it'll be a hindrance because he's recommending other paths. And listen, Conor does have options, man. I mean, I don't want to say Conor's calling the shots because that sounds a little ridiculous because, you know, there would be some pushback if it went too ridiculous. But, yeah, Conor is calling the shots, man. He gets to pick his spots. And if he says it's the Nate trilogy, I'm sure they'll find a way to make the Nate trilogy. Now, you know, you've heard what he says, that Nate's trying to price himself out. And, you know, Nate's made it clear he's asking for that $20 million. And listen, as crazy as it sounds, it does kind of make sense for Conor McGregor to sit around and wait for a little bit. See if George St. Pierre beats Michael Bisping. I'm picking Michael Bisping. I'm picking Michael Bisping in that fight. I'll just say it right now. But if George St. Pierre were to beat Michael Bisping, and I know you got Robert Whittaker out there, another interim title holder, but you're telling me that Conor McGregor versus George St. Pierre wouldn't be a marketable fight? Hell yeah, it would. Hell yeah, it would. And I'm telling you right now, those two guys are not that big. You know, like, there's not that big of a discrepancy in the size between the two of them. It's just not. George St. Pierre is not a huge welterweight. Hell, I mean, you don't have to take my word for it. I mean, Farah Sahabi used to be quoted as saying, I think George could go down to 155 pounds. You know, it'd be a tough cut. And we don't want to talk about tough weight cuts right now, man. Kevin Lee, the scene over in Pancras. You know, weight cutting is such a big conversation right now. But that aside, you know, Conor and George St. Pierre are not vastly different sized individuals. So you could potentially have Conor McGregor challenging for the middleweight title, which is insane. But it's the only guy in the division he would ever have a chance to do it against. And no, the rest of those guys are monsters. Monsters that are a lot bigger than Conor McGregor. So that's a lot of ifs, man. It really is. There's a lot of ifs to happen. Which is why I think that December 30th date, you know, Dana had teased that Conor trying to come back December 30th. I think that's too early. I don't think it's going to happen. I think it behooves Conor McGregor. Not only, has he been enjoying his time on vacation with $100 million in the bank, as he should, spending time with his kid, but it behooves him to wait until after UFC 217 to make a call. So it's not that far away. It's not that far away. Less than a month, so it wouldn't be terrible to wait. I think it'd be too short of a time to maybe stay ready for December 30th. Now, Tony Ferguson says he's going to stay ready, so we'll see what happens. But I do think it would kind of make sense for Conor to wait and see what happens at 217. But with all that said, if it plays out the way I think it will, I think Michael Bisping wins the fight. No offense to George St. Pierre. I think Michael Bisping wins the fight. And then we got to look at something else to do anyway. So at that point, I pray that it's Conor McGregor versus Tony Ferguson. That's the fight I want to see. And I know It's not the biggest seller, but I don't care about what the seller is. I don't care about the money fight. As Tony Ferguson said, it's not the money fight. It's the pride fight. Defend or vacate. I love that attitude. I love that line. That's the fight I want to see. That's the fight to me that has to happen. I'm sick of the interim titles. And man, God bless Conor McGregor for everything he did. God bless him, man. I am not taking away from his. And it's not like he's going to make chump change. It's not like the UFC's not going to pay him to fight. He's still going to make good money. And you could still do the trilogy down the line. I don't think it matters if Conor loses. I honestly don't think it matters if Conor loses. We're talking about the casual fan anyway, right? You think the casual fan cares what belt is on the line? No. The casual fan just wants to see that trilogy fight at some point. So if Conor loses to Tony Ferguson or loses to somebody else down the line, you can go back and revisit that trilogy fight. And Nate said he's not fighting for less than $20 million, so he can sit around and wait anyway. He's got nothing going on. He can wait till he gets that $20 million payday. So, listen, that's all I'm saying. Tony Ferguson, deserving champion, amazing performance. Watching his rise from the Ultimate Fighter to interim title holder has been incredible. And the guy is must-watch TV for me in the cage and on the mic. He really is. I am a fan, and I hope that the Conor McGregor fight comes next. Kevin Lee, we'll see more Kevin Lee. Staph infection, can't make excuses, man. I was picking Tony Ferguson going in, but yeah, man, that weight cut and the staff on top of it. I think if you were, you know, kind of on the fence, I think that had to swing one. Listen, I've had a staph infection one time, and it does. For anybody that's never had it, it really does sap you of energy. So it kind of makes, you know, everything that Kevin did a little bit more respectable and a little bit more incredible. But listen. We'll see Kevin down the line. Maybe it's at 170. Maybe it's not going to be at 165. Sorry. Get that out. I don't see Dana wavering on that, man. Dana has been adamantly opposed to adding these weight classes. He said it multiple times. Hell, the last time I asked him about it was in Anaheim. Because remember in Anaheim for the pay-per-view out there, Jones and Cormier, that was the week that the California State Athletic Commission, you know, it talked about implementing more weight classes. I think Jeff Nowitzki from the UFC came out and said, listen, we would be in support of this. But I guess that was the royal we that had nothing to do with Dana White on there, because I asked Dana at the press conference, hey, listen, you know, has your position changed on this? Are you thinking about adding more weight classes? And he said, nope. And listen, he's still making calls. I know a lot of people say, ah, oh, Dana's a figurehead. It's, you know, it's this new WEIMG, Endeavor. I don't know if you guys saw that. We didn't do a story on it. I sent the note to the guys that I thought we should do a story on it, but Mr. Dan Stupp, editor-in-chief, was like, I don't really see a story here. It's just a name change. And I suppose he's probably right, but just in case you didn't get the memo, Endeavor is the name of the ownership group now. And so it's no more WEIMG, which, to be honest with you, Endeavor, that's a little bit more, it's a little easier to deal with, right? So the new Endeavor owners, yes, they've got their hands and stuff, but, you know, on the day-to-day fight operations, man, you know, Endeavor's not going in there. I mean, what, Ari Emanuel's going to be like, you know, we really need 165-pound division. You know what, I tell you what, man, this light heavyweight division and this heavyweight is too big of a discrepancy. We need a cruise. Nah, come on, man, he's not doing that. He's trusting Dana to make those decisions, and Dana's opposed to the new weight classes. So I know Kevin Lee likes that 165, and listen, I think it does make some sense, but I don't think it's happening anytime soon. So we'll see what the future is for Kevin Lee, but we will see him again. Just give me Ferguson and Conor McGregor. Give me Ferguson and McGregor. All right, Demetrius Johnson. Man, that submission, phenomenal, right? I mean, watching it on TV, just can't even understand what happened. I mean, it's amazing, right? You're like, I gotta see that again. Show me that again. And an absolutely amazing submission. Gotta be on the submission of the year list. You know, whether it win or not, I don't know, but it's gotta be on the list. Now, man, I don't know about the name though. What, the Mighty Whiz Bar? Is that what he went with? Come on, man. Demetrius, I threw out the mousetrap. I was in the back watching on TV, so I had more time than I normally do. I wasn't updating a play-by-play. I wasn't updating fighter pages. I wasn't sending out tweet results and all that. So I had some time to think, and I thought, man, the mousetrap. I don't know about the Mighty Whiz Bar. And I heard, you know, he went on the MMA Hour and said that he's got another sequence of series that's called the mousetrap. But who knows if he'll ever pull that one off? You don't know if you'll ever. The Mighty Whiz Bar, is that what he called it? It didn't even register with me because the perfect name was there. It was already there. So I didn't even. Demetrius, you're perfect in many ways, but you messed that one up. But I tell you what I really wanted to get to on Demetrius Johnson was, and it ties back into the rankings. Because listen, we could sit here and just talk about how amazing the submission was, because it was. God, even on the super, I mean, it's even more impressive on that Phantom Cam footage that the UFC puts out, the super, super slow motion. Even more impressive, man. Just seeing the way he did that, it's phenomenal. Poor Ray Borg, man. That thing's going to get shown over. That's going to be, Vitor Belfort getting kicked in the face by Anderson Silva, where it just gets shown over and over and over. That's one of the greatest submissions in UFC history. In MMA history. Just amazing. So we could talk about that. But what I did want to talk about is the fact that I think, and our rankings reflect it now, that Demetrius Johnson is the number one pound-for-pound fighter on the planet. I'm sorry. I don't see any argument against it. He is the number one pound-for-pound fighter on the planet. Now, some people are saying the best ever. It's tough. I mean, you might make that argument. I mean, in some ways, it's almost easy to say, right, because we're still in the development mode of this sport. So, you know, you keep seeing the wrinkles added. You keep seeing the sport evolve. And so if fighters are getting better and the sport is evolving and everything is moving forward, then, yeah, it makes sense to say that the guy that's on top now is also the guy on top of all time. And it's hard. I mean, how do you compare somebody to Hoist Gracie? I mean, that guy was competing in a different sport. I mean, that's 20 years ago, and it's not even the same sport, man. You know, I think you could throw Anderson Silva there, but Anderson Silva's still kind of, I don't know, I don't want to say tainting his legacy, but, I mean, that prime Anderson Silva, you know, prime Fedor, prime GSP. I mean, if GSP comes back and wins, I mean, you can make all those arguments. But I think you could make the argument that Demetrius is the best ever. You really could. I mean, John Jones, amazing, but obviously the setbacks, man. Those are the hurdles that cloud your argument. But to me, the guy is the number one pound-for-pound fighter on the planet, and our rankings reflect that now. I did see a lot of people getting pissed in our comment section and stuff saying, I don't understand why John Jones is even on the list still, because we have John Jones at number two. And I saw some people saying, listen, man, he doesn't even deserve to be there. I disagree with that. I really do disagree with that for now. We don't know if John Jones is going to be suspended. We don't know the full story about what happened. And until we know what the full story is about what happened, I don't think you take him off the list. You leave him there. You leave him there for now, okay? If he's suspended, then yeah, you take him off. And then you just start getting into a whole rabbit hole there of, you know, has he been using all along? And that's why this is such a terrible situation that we're in, because this is one of the greatest ever. And where do you draw the line? But to me, right now, John Jones is on the list. Demetrius Johnson, number one pound for pound. All right, until John Jones is suspended, then you address it. For the record, we have Conor McGregor at number three and Daniel Cormier at number four. Once you get outside of that, you're really kind of splitting hairs. But, I mean, those top three or four positions, I think you can make some credible arguments, even though it is a very hypothetical situation. Now, here's the one that always gets me on the argument between Demetrius Johnson and John Jones. I think the young Mike Bond and I had a pretty heated argument on one of the episodes of the MMA Roadshow, but the argument against Demetrius Johnson is that he doesn't have the quality of competition. He hasn't faced the same quality of competition as John Jones. And the reason for that is people generally cite the number of former champions that John Jones beat. And I get that. It's valid, okay? It's valid. I mean, he's talking about, name individuals. I mean, when you go through John Jones's record and you look at who he's beaten, right? I mean, these are people and names that we know and respect and have watched for years, and we know what it means. I mean, let's just start with the championship run. I mean, you could add in, Vera, Matyushenko, Bader, all that, but let's just start the championship. Shogun Hua, MMA legend. Quentin Jackson, MMA legend. Lyoto Machida, former champ, future Hall of Famer. Rashad Evans, former champ. Vitor Belfort, MMA legend. Chael Sonnen, superstar, of course, but for different reasons. Alexander Gustafsson, legit. Glover Teixeira, Daniel Cormier. I mean, these are names that, especially when you talk about the Shoguns, the Rampages, the Machidas, the Rashads of the world, the Vitors of the world. Even though, you know, Vitor, that's certainly what it wasn't his weight class at the time. I get it, man. I get that argument. I really do. But there's something to be said, too, for the fact that Demetrius Johnson is the only champ. He's the only champ the UFC has ever seen. That means something. So just because you can't say you didn't beat former champions, I don't think that's a disqualification. So here's what I did. Because here's the other thing. And I'm not trying to disrespect John Jones because, God, I think John Jones is phenomenal. I really do. I'm not a John Jones hater. If anything, I'm a John Jones fan. I'm saying don't judge him yet. Don't judge him yet until we know what happened. Yes, the circumstances do not look good. I'll admit that, but we don't know yet. But you start looking at the names too. Shogun. Okay, I mean, Shogun's hanging around, but, you know, the guy's having to pull out of fights because his knee is just gone. I mean, he's had some losses. Rampage, where does he stand anymore? We don't even know what organization he's fighting in. He's a heavyweight now. Machida, we'll see. He's coming back. He's coming back in a couple weeks. I'm excited to see what he has left. Rashad, we know what's happening with Rashad. Vitor, you know, Vitor's nearing the end. So I'm not taking – and I don't want to take away the wins at the time because you can't have revisionist history where you go and you say, okay, well, that win doesn't mean anything because look. Okay, because it does. It meant something. That was a fight at the time that meant something. But so here's what I did. I was trying to find a way to quantify this, okay? And I'm not the stat guy. That's the young Mike Bond. I'm not the smartest guy. I'll admit it. I'm just a guy that watches a lot of fights, right? So I figure, what can I do to kind of quantify? How can we value and compare these two runs, okay? Because the casual name value isn't the same, right? Ray Borg, Wilson Hayes, Tim Elliott, Henry Cejudo, John Dodson, Kyoji Horiguchi, Chris Carriasso, Ali Bagatinov, Joseph Benavidez, John Moraga. I mean, all those names mean something, but they don't mean as much to the casual fan. They don't mean as much to the argument you're making as Rampage, as Shogun, as Rashad, as Loyoto, right? I mean, those are all fighters you can call with one name, and we know who you're talking about. You know what I mean? So here's what I did. You guys tell me if this is fair or not. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But it was the only way I could think to we could compare these two runs. So what I did was I went through and I added up the records of each of these fighters. I started with both John Jones and Demetrius Johnson when they won the championship and through all their defenses. Okay? So we're starting with Demetrius Johnson, we're starting with the win over Joseph Benavidez at UFC 152, where he won the flyweight title, okay? And with John Jones, we're starting with UFC 128, Shogun Hua, when he won the UFC light heavyweight title. And I took every fighter that those fighters faced in their run since, okay? All their title defenses since. And I added up their record after that fight, okay? See what I'm doing here? Henry Cejudo, for instance. Let's make it easy. Henry Cejudo has gone 1-1, right? He's won one fight. He's lost one fight since losing to Demetrius Johnson. Kyoji Horiguchi, 5-0. Has gone 5-0 since that time, okay? Ray Borg just lost. Doesn't have any fights, so he doesn't add in. All right? Makes sense? Okay, here's what I came up with. Demetrius Johnson's championship opponents, okay, in the fight since fighting Demetrius Johnson have gone 37-16 for a 69.8 winning percentage, okay, almost 70%, 37-16. John Jones, 38 wins, 27 losses for a 58.4 winning rate. 11 points higher than Demetrius Johnson's opponents. 11 points. So who's fighting the better fighters? Who's fighting the better fighters? Is that not a mathematical argument that maybe it's Demetrius Johnson? So here's another way I looked at it. Okay, let's take all those fighters. Let's take all those fighters and see where they still stand. Where do they still stand in the division today? Maybe this isn't, you know, it's not as technically precise, but I pulled up the MMA Junkie rankings, okay? Out of all the people that John Jones has beat, he's beat five fighters that are still in the rankings right now. Cormier at number 2, Gustafsson at number 5, Teixeira at number 6, St. Preux at number 10, and Hua at number 12. Now, Machida would probably be in there if he wasn't on that suspension, but the layoff he had, we took him out. Okay, so five fighters, 2, 5, 6, 10, and 12. Okay? Demetrius Johnson has Benavidez at number 2. Now, keep in mind, the way we do rankings is not the way the UFC does ranking. We don't have a champion and then number 1 contender. We have a number 1, which is where Demetrius and John Jones both rank in their divisions. Okay, Demetrius Johnson has Benavidez at number 2, Cejudo at number 3, Horiguchi at number 4, Borg at number 5, Moraga at number 9, Hayes at number 10, Bagatinov at number 11. Would have Dotson, but Dotson moved up. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 fighters still ranked right now. And take this, 7 in the top 11 in the division right now. And if you take number 1 out, if you do it the way the UFC does it, champion, it's 7 of the top 10 contenders. 7 of the top 10 current contenders, Demetrius Johnson holds victories over. So who's fighting the better fighters? Whose record's more impressive? I don't know, man. Again, I'm not the brightest guy, all right? I'm not. I'm just me. So maybe these arguments aren't good. Maybe the winning percentage of his opponents isn't the best way to argue it. Maybe the current rankings of his opponents aren't the best way to argue it. I don't know what is. I get it. The names mean more in John Jones' run. In Demetrius Johnson's run, I think they might be more impressive. So just something to think about. Something to think about on the heels of that just scintillating win by Demetrius Johnson. My God, the dude is must-watch TV for me. I've seen the pay-per-view figures like you have. They look low. I think we knew that going in. Our web traffic was pretty good. Our web traffic is usually a pretty good indicator of how things are going, but it was pretty slow all week. It really was. But it was good on fight night. It was good on the weekend after. So there was some buzz. But, yeah, I get it. The guy's not the biggest draw in the world. He fought for pay-per-view points. He got it. We'll see if he's happy about that because, obviously, it wasn't a huge seller. But the guy is awesome. Demetrius Johnson's awesome. And I'm torn because I get it too, man. If the guy wants to go up to 135 pounds and challenges himself there, maybe it gets a little bit more attention. Maybe it gets him a little bit more respect. But the dude is just the perfect athlete at 125. What's wrong with getting 15 defenses? What's wrong with getting 20 defenses? I mean, that's crazy talk. But what's wrong with doing it? I don't know, man. It appeals to me. It does appeal to me. I mean, tough for Cejudo and Benavidez to get back there right now, but they're hanging in there. Horiguchi's gone, but you got Sergio Pettis coming up. That's a name he hasn't fought yet. Formiga always stumbles right when he's starting to get close. Got Brendan Moreno coming up. Young kid there. You know, maybe Ben wins a future challenger at some point. I don't know. I'm cool with him staying at flyweight. I really am. I'm cool with him staying at flyweight. I'm cool watching greatness. I am cool watching greatness. Money fights are money fights because they appeal to casual fans. They appeal to people that don't normally watch MMA, not the hardcore audience. You know, it's that group of people that doesn't normally tune in that will tune in. And I understand that. But to me, God, there's nothing better than watching Demetrius. And when he's doing shit that you've never seen, come on, man. How can you not want to watch that? So, listen, again, said I wasn't going to rehash 216. Hopefully we spun it forward a little bit. But I did want to play a couple minutes of Demetrius Johnson. Again, this is a short clip here. This is him talking to Kevin Ioli after his win at UFC 216. I was way in the back recording this, so I didn't get to ask any questions because my man Cole Coffey was enjoying himself in Spain. But I wanted you to hear just a few minutes from Demetrius Johnson because it's amazing hearing him talk about where he stands, what this means. And I love the way he ends this little exchange with Kevin Ioli.
Demetrius, right in front of you. Congratulations, my friend. First of all, what does the record mean? You know, the 5 years of defending your title and being the champion. Can you put into words what it means to beat Anderson Silva, of all people?
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, when I first got the belt back in 2012 and then defended it in 2013 against John Dodson, and then one after another, after another, after another, you know, going through an injury, staying healthy, always trying to get better at the gym, taking on new challenges, the rematches, you know, to see who's evolved, fighting Greg Jackson's camp 3 times now. It's awesome. It's an awesome feeling. Thank you to my coaches and my teammates back at home. This was, you know, a 12-week camp, and to be able to come back out here, re-peak again, have no injuries, it just feels really good to be able to not hear Anderson Silva's name next to mine anymore. Now my name is like, they're like, oh, who has the longest reigning, you know, title defenses? Demetrius Johnson does.
When did it first become a possibility to you, when you started looking at it? Like, after what fight did you start thinking, hey, Anderson's in my sights?
It's, well, obviously 10, but it's hard to, you know, when you get through your first title defense, you know, Anderson Silva is still champion. He's still beating people. And we always took one fight at a time, you know, one title defense at a time. But like I said, when we got to the 10th one, it's like, oh, man, we're right here. We're walking on uncharted territories. We're tied with Anderson Silva, so we're going to go back home, reset, refocus, and always evolve as a champion and as an athlete. And we made it happen.
You always do something different. You add things to your game. But tonight was just a mind-blowing that move that you made. I heard you say that you had worked on that in the gym. Was there something specifically that you saw that led you to think that was something to work on, or was it just a move you wanted to have in your arsenal?
Well, let me hit on two things. So it's funny. I never, you know, you see a lot of people out there, they're doing their training videos, their vlogs and stuff. I don't show any of my training. I just don't do it. It's none of your guys' business what I'm doing in the gym. But we do have the embedded crew coming out there, and I'll let them film my warm-up. And they're like, dude, you need to let us, you know, film your sparring, because the stuff that you're doing in sparring, you're actually doing in an octagon. And Rick Lee, he'll tell you already, in Edmonton, I was practicing throwing people up. I do it all the time in the gym. When I was in the octagon fighting Ray Borg, he's very tough dude. His game is scrambling. That's what he likes to do. And when he was like, oh, I'm out, scramble DJ, I'm going to get on top of him. And even when he took me down, I was like, okay, you took me down. Are you going to pass guard? No. And I elevated him, then I got back up, and I was like, okay, you took me down. That was the best opportunity you had. And then when I had his back, he was very planted. His weight was planted. And Matt, a couple weeks ago, he was saying, when somebody's planted, you have to shift their weight, and when they shift their weight, they're light. So when I had him, I was kneeing him. I was going to try to kick him in the face, but I knew he was looking for that to try to take me down. So I kneed him, and then I shook his weight. I shifted his weight, and then when he shifted, he went back through an elbow, and I was like, got you. And that's when I threw him up and then landed an armbar. Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Demetrius Johnson with a little bit of swagger, man. I love it. It's coming out. I mean, I know people call him bland and call him boring, and I don't know if it was just an uncomfortableness before or it was contrived. I mean, John Jones is a guy that certainly his public persona, and people used to call him fake, and that was a little bit wrong, but I guess it was kind of true. I mean, the guy just wanted to be the clean-cut guy, and we now know that's not who he is, and that's just not who he's ever going to be. But he wanted to be clean-cut. I mean, he said it before. He's like, you know, I want to be the guy that Nike wants to sponsor. I want to be the guy that Gatorade wants to sponsor. And to do that, you got to be the clean-cut guy. You got to be the George St. Pierre guy, right? But, George St. Pierre, and we'll see at 217. I mean, I don't know if that's the type of people that sell anymore. And I don't know. I think Demetrius Johnson's finally getting comfortable in front of the camera, comfortable in front of us, basically, the media, fans, just letting himself be him. And I love the way he ended that little segment there. And again, you know, just the confidence that he has, knowing he's the greatest in the world, man, that's incredible. And how about a little Rick Lee shout out there, man? Rick Lee was working on Embedded, so he was with Demetrius Johnson quite a bit, because remember they did the Embedded, and then the fight got canceled, and then they had to go do the Embedded again. So I was talking to Rick Lee He spent quite a time with Demetrius Johnson. Rick Lee, for those that don't know, was actually the first video guy at MMA Junkie, basically. I mean, he was the one that started our video. There was a time, you know, a couple years back where we weren't doing video. And part of the reason was, you know, myself, Dan Stuff, we didn't really know how, and we didn't want to do a crappy job at it, to be honest with you. We didn't want to do a handy cam in a hallway with some shaky footage and, you know, film it on your iPhone or whatever. We didn't want to do that. And fortunately, USA Today, when they bought us, you know, they had video resources and they helped point us in the right direction. And Rick Lee was a guy that they brought in to head up our video department. And actually, you know, he helped train me a lot. He was the one that first taught me a lot about video and just, you know, the basics. I'm still learning. I mean, I'm still a writer by trade, but that's, you know, that's the way journalism is now. You got to do a little bit of everything. And Rick Lee was the guy that got all that started for MMA Junkie. And then corporate happened. a guy that no longer works at USA Today and Rick kind of butted heads for no reason. And I think there were some politics at play, and you know how that goes. So Rick and decided to part ways with us, but still a good dude. So it's kind of funny to hear the shout out there. All right, one other thing I want to mention about 216 real quick. I mean, again, it's a week later, so I don't want to spend too much time on it. Although, man, Bobby Greenland of Anata, how great was that? Cody Stamann, that guy is the real deal, man. He really is. Fun night. But no, what I want to say is the UFC did something different. I don't know if you guys caught this or not, but the UFC did something different at Media Day, and I liked it. I really did. They brought over coaches. They brought over coaches to come talk to us on Media Day, or I guess not Media Day. I guess it was open workouts. Yes, the open workouts. They brought the coaches over to speak as well. I liked it. I liked it a lot. You know, getting a chance to pick Matt Hume's brain. You know, getting a chance to talk to the head coaches, you know, Robert Follis coming in and talking about things a little bit more technically, and obviously being able to give some insight on the fighter that they see on a daily basis that we don't see. I love it. We don't do a good enough job, and I've said it before, I think we should be doing more talking to coaches. I think it's insightful, and I think it's great. Boxing does a great, like in boxing, the trainers are kind of part of the story, and they're really not in MMA as much. And, of course, you know, when we're covering live events, I mean, our bosses want to see the fighter footage, man. They want to see that stuff. That's what they want us bringing back. But I love the insight that the coaches provide. So I thought that was cool. I hope they do more of it. Again, I mean, it was cool to see the UFC actually do this and bring these coaches in front of us. So I hope we see more of it. If you didn't see it, we did do stories on them. So they were on MMA Junkie. Brandon Gibson was another one that came up and spoke. So we did do stories on it. It's on YouTube as well. But if you want to catch kind of what those conversations were like, and you know, tell me if you like the tone, there. I will say, mentioning YouTube, oh my God, today has been a nightmare of a day. This was supposed to be a little more behind the scenes here. This was supposed to be my easiest day at work, no problem. Was going to have a light day in the office, and then was going to be able to, you know, sit down and record the podcast and call it a day. And damn it if it didn't end up being a nightmare. Part of it was we had a couple sick employees and some sick families, and so that changed schedules around and all that. But in addition to that, nightmare with YouTube this morning. It all had to do with behind-the-scenes stuff. But if you are a YouTube subscriber to the MMA Junkie YouTube channel and you got flooded with videos this morning, I'm sorry. Let me just personally apologize. Let me also tell you that was not on purpose. It was not through anything that we did. It was just some back-end technical stuff that basically Abby Subban over in Europe caught it early, obviously with him being ahead of us on the schedule. He saw it, and he messaged me. So, fortunately, like the minute I woke up, the first thing I do when I wake up, which I probably shouldn't, but the first thing I do is pick up my phone, and I'm checking WhatsApp, and I check messages, and I check email, and I check Twitter, just to make sure I didn't miss anything while I was asleep, you know, nothing I need to get on right away. And fortunately, Abby Subban's message was there. And so immediately, as soon as I woke up, I'm jumping on this thing and trying to fix it, and we got it fixed. I think something like 50 videos that were old videos basically got resurfaced and pushed live, and I saw some people get kind of annoyed on social media and in the comment section and that sort of thing. But it was about 50 of about 5,000 that we're trying to re-upload through a technical mishap. So I was glad we caught it when we did. But let me just personally apologize if you were one of those YouTube users affected and your feed got all jacked up. So I am sorry for that. But other than that, those coaches' videos are there. So listen. One thing I really wanted to talk about was this Mark Hunt situation. Big deal here. And it's been, you know, controversial. Of course, Mark Hunt, no stranger to controversy. But it's, you know, I think a lot of people are kind of confused and don't know where they stand on this. I mean, the UFC essentially pulling a guy out of a fight. He says he's okay. He wants to fight. But the UFC pulls him out. Of course, he was scheduled to fight Marcin Tybura down in Australia. Now Fabricio Werdum was going to step in, which, man, look at Fabricio Werdum pocketing $400K the other night to beat Walt Harris and not stepping into another fight just a month later. Got to love that move for Fabricio Werdum. But Mark Hunt's certainly no stranger to controversy. Mark Hunt's certainly no stranger to being frustrated with the UFC, and he absolutely lashed out as soon as this was announced. Pretty interesting move. I mean, the UFC wasn't coy about it. I mean, they came out, they issued a statement to the Australia Daily News, I believe it was. Then we actually got the statement as well. But basically, they made it clear, you know, it was boiling down to this Players Tribune piece that they said, look, is causing us some concern. And I think it's understandable. You know, you got Mark Hunt saying, you know, slurring words and experiencing memory loss and you know, saying he's okay if he dies in there. And, man, you know, a lot of people when it first came out were like, hey, this is not good. This is really, really not a good look. And it's not. It's the reality of the situation. So there's nothing wrong with him talking about it. But I think he had to know that if a commission was paying attention, that they would want to see more. I mean, he's 43 years old. Certainly no stranger to slugfests as much as he's no stranger to controversy. I mean, you know what you're getting when you're getting a Mark Hunt fight. He's going to show you that iron chin that he's got. He's going to stand in the pocket, you know, with no head movement, and he's just going to come at you, and you can come at him, and we'll see who's standing. I got to say, man, I hate to say it, but I understand where the UFC is coming from here. And here's what I think is that, I mean, Mark, there's just no question Mark Hunt hurt himself. Now, the whole, you know, cussing and slamming Dana White, I'm sure you saw the video by now. Dana, TMZ Sports, found him in New York, I believe. Got a quote, and Dana said, listen, I'm not mad. I believe he's not mad. I honestly believe that. I know he understands the frustration. I know he understands the anger. I know he understands Mark Hunt. Mark Hunt's been mad at him before. It's not the first time Mark Hunt has talked trash about Dana White. I honestly believe that Dana is not mad. I know that Dana has respect for Mark Hunt. I mean, Dana has gone out of his way in the past to praise Mark Hunt. I think back in Denver, you know, where he kind of told the story. I think that's where people really started talking about that story where, I forget who Mark Hunt beat that night in Denver. But I just remember it being in Colorado because I remember the room, I think. But anyway, the press conference one night where, you know, Dana basically started really telling that story about how when the UFC bought Pride, they wanted to pay Mark Hunt money to go away. You know, his MMA record wasn't great. He had a losing MMA record, of course, a kickboxing legend. They could sell him over in Japan. But the UFC didn't want Mark Hunt to fight. They offered him quite a bit of money. I think it came out later. It was like $400,000 or something like that. I mean, it was a lot of money. And Mark Hunt said, no, I don't want you buying me out of my contract. Me? I'm taking that all day. Look, you want to pay me not to work? I'm in. Sign me up, buddy. I'm out. You want to pay me to never be an MMA journalist again? I'm out. Pay me. But Mark wouldn't do that. He wouldn't go for it. And he said, no, I don't want your money. I want my fights. I want to come in the UFC and I want to fight, and I want to prove to you that I belong here. And he did. And I know Dana has a lot of respect for that. So I really don't think this is personal beef here. I honestly think, I mean, the UFC is already involved in litigation with Mark Hunt right here, right? In some ways, I honestly feel like they'd be opening themselves to more litigation for him to say that he has this memory loss, he has these concerns, and he's slurring his words, and they sent him back out there to fight. They know about it, and they sent him back out there to fight. I feel like that's almost open. I feel like there's more legal concerns for the UFC there. I don't think this was personal. I really don't think this was personal. I think this was smart from the UFC. I hate to say it. I think it's smart from the UFC. Now, if they turn their back on Mark Hunt, they don't help him, you know, they don't give him any further information about what kind of battery of tests they need to see, about what steps he can take to quell their concerns, okay, then the UFC's in the wrong. But I don't have a problem with what the UFC did here. I just don't. I think it's understandable. Hell, in some ways, you might even call it admirable. But where do we go from here? That's what matters, is where do we go from here? If they don't give him a method for how to resolve this, because you're telling me the UFC doesn't want the ticket sales that Mark Hunt generates. I'm telling you right now, man, he is a superstar down there. I've been fortunate enough to go down to New Zealand. I've been fortunate enough to go down to Australia. And the guy moves the needle down there, right? He's a superstar down there. Telling me they don't want those ticket sales? You're telling me Endeavor? If Endeavor's making all the calls and it's all about money, you think they don't want that money? Of course they want that money. I honestly think this was the right play. I feel bad for Mark, and I feel like the UFC has got to move forward in resolving it. But I love the fact that the UFC actually said it. I mean, how many times do they, you know, not really say anything? And they made a clear statement about what this was about. They made it very clear. This was pointing towards this article, and that brings up concerns. And those are concerns that people had expressed before. So, as much as it sucks for Mark Hunt, I got to say, I kind of understand the UFC's logic here, and I don't necessarily think that it was bad logic. I do think that they got to move forward now. They've got to find a way to get this resolved. The other thing, the one part that did strike me bad, of course, I always feel like Mark Hunt doesn't do himself any favors with the way he expresses things, right? And I get it. I mean, he keeps it real. Okay, that's cool. I mean, that's all right, cool. Yeah, F you bald-headed prick, Dana White. I mean, that's cool. But I just don't feel like it helps get anything done. I really don't. Dana kind of joked to TMZ. He's like, no, I'm not expecting an apology from Mark Hunt. I will never get an apology from Mark Hunt. And he won't. I mean, Mark Hunt's not going to apologize. But, you know, I'm not always a fan of the way he presents stuff, to be honest with you. And so I think sometimes his message gets lost. You know, the true point of his message gets lost in the spirit of the message, I guess, or the way the message is delivered. I think it causes issues. So I think sometimes the way he presents things works against him. So I'm not a fan of that. The other thing, too, is this whole I got taken out of context. All right, now listen. There's no way Mark Hunt wrote that, okay? I know it's first person, but there's no way Mark Hunt wrote that. And I'm sure that's the case with all of these. I mean, these first person stories, I guess, that, you know, these websites that are out there so that the athlete can speak directly to you. I mean, he still has a shadow writer or somebody helping him with it. I mean, hell, we've done that in the past with tough blogs. You know, we don't really do those anymore, but we used to do blogs on The Ultimate Fighter every week. And, you know, some fighters, it was easier for them to just talk through it. You know what I mean? And we just record what they said and we'd write it down. Still them talking. You know what I mean? Sometimes it was easier for them to write it and we just edit it for them. But, you know, I mean, there's very few, just in the way that there's very few fighters or very few writers, I say, that can step into the cage and do very well for themselves. There's very few fighters that are refined craftsmen with their written word. That's just not what they do, right? So I understand. They get help. But it's a first-person piece that you definitely had first writer for you. I mean, that had to have been run through. There's no way. Or at least I'm guessing. Maybe I'm wrong. But I doubt it. I can't imagine a website saying this is a first-person piece and not having you sign off on it. Because can you imagine if you wrote something and you said, this is from Mark Hunt, and Mark Hunt 5 minutes later in social media after it comes out says, I never said that. Your whole website looks ridiculous. So you can't tell me that when these people get these first-person pieces, they don't get it cleared by that fighter. Once the final product is put together, you can't tell me they don't vet it through that person and make sure it's okay. So you can't say you got taken out of context in a first-person piece that you signed off on. That's supposed to be your words. You can't say you got taken out of context. That was frustrating to me. So anyway, I feel bad for Mark Hunt. I hope they work to resolve this. He doesn't have a lot of time left, right? He said it. Listen, I need to make money for my family. I need to take care of things. He can't fight forever. He's 43. He can't keep fighting forever. So we got to get something figured out here. But I got to say, I'm not upset at the UFC for making this move. I'm just not. All right, well, listen, as you can imagine, Mark Hunt is not necessarily discussing the situation right now. Dana White and the UFC are not necessarily discussing the situation right now because there is potential legal ramifications moving forward. So I figure, what the hell? Let's find somebody else here. Marcin Tybura. Let's get a hold of him. I've been meaning to talk to him anyway. Good dude. Met him a couple times. Spoken to him. Always a pleasure to be around. He's training in Albuquerque, New Mexico right now with the Jackson Wink MMA team. And I thought, you know what? Let's get his take on what's happening and what he thinks about this whole situation. So set up a call with him, and here's what he had to say about everything.
Hey, how you doing, sir? It's John Morgan with MMA Junkie.
Hi, I'm good. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. This is still a good time for you?
Yeah.
Awesome, man.
Okay.
Well, let's talk about the big news, man. You're still in the main event, but you got a new opponent with Fabricio Werdum. How did you find out? How did this all go down?
Like 2 days ago, my manager called me, and at this point, actually, every time he calls me, I'm just wondering if something bad happened, and this time was the bad news about Marhan pulling out, and after that, he told me that Fabricio is stepping up for that, and actually, that took me like 1 hour to speak with the coach. With the coaches and decide, and here we go.
Well, talk about that hour, man. Talk about those discussions because, you know, certainly Hunt is a dangerous opponent, but Fabricio is just an entirely different kind of opponent, you know, a different body type, a different style. So what were your discussions like that you decided, yeah, let's do this?
You know, what we discussed is They actually asked me if I want to do this fight, and if I said yes, they actually start talking about what would be the plan for the fight and how would they see the opportunity for me to win. And actually, I just texted Pablo that we agree, and that's it. That's not a big talk, actually. They said they're here for me, and that's it. I know it's a completely different opponent, completely different style, and we have to change much of the plan, but it's still almost 6 weeks to go, so we have time.
Still plenty of time. Yeah, definitely. I got to ask, I mean, is it you know, just a chance to fight Fabricio, is that kind of special to you? I mean, being a jiu-jitsu guy yourself, you know, is facing a guy on that level something that's appealing to you?
You know, it's really special for me to fight, you know, top two already fighter in the world, and Fabricio, which I recognize him one of the best heavyweight in the world, like even the best, because, you know, he beats Fedor in his prime time, and he beats, like, Kane when he was, like, unbeatable by the time. And this guy has something special. I know he's good. And, you know, this is the top. That's what I want to do when I came to the UFC. And now it's happened. So I'm just happy.
Very cool. I got to ask you, you know, Mark Hunt's comments as a fellow fighter, you know, not necessarily whether he deserved a fight or not, but when you hear a guy say that, you know, talk about potential mental issues and, you know, issues from being hit in the head, as a fighter, as a fellow fighter, does that scare you at all? I mean, does it concern you? Does it make you step back and think about things a little bit?
I know we all try to show this. This is the sport. It's not only the striking somebody in the head. That's the sport. I don't think he should say some stuff like this. But also, I don't think I would be in charge to you know, to say somebody is healthy to fight or not. So I don't actually know all the details. I just, you know, see whatever you see. It's like they the interview he did. Mm-hmm. I think he shouldn't say that. He shouldn't say that.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. All right, let's talk about you. I mean, you're training out at Jackson's, right? How long have you been out there, and how's that going?
Yeah, I've been here 7 weeks already. So far, it's amazing, completely different camp than I used to do, and I think it's much better than I did before this, you know. I always, you know, improving important, but here, you know, it's again the next step for me to, you know, to improve that I'm the best in the world and I deserve this fight. So far I'm feeling really good here and with all the sparring partners, with all the coaches and everything, it's great. It's great. I think it will be a big progress for me.
Yeah, a lot of people say, I wonder, I mean, what is it that makes it special? Is it, you know, the level of instruction that you're getting with the experience that the coaches have, or is it more about, you know, having those partners, having so many bodies to go with? Because I hear a little bit of both. I mean, is it both of them, or is one, you know, more important than the other?
I think it's both. I know, actually, it's everything about the coaches, because they create the atmosphere that so many people come here to train. So I think it's both. The coaches are great. They you know, experience. They do a lot of plan for the fights. Talk about it. You know, many personal training, and also a lot of sparring where you can actually every day like spar with the new guys, and that's a big thing for me as well.
Very cool. What's been the hardest part? It's got to be tough to be away from home that long, right?
Yeah, it is, but you know, I'm actually chasing my dream, so that's the prize, and I'm cool with that completely.
Very well said. Very well said. Well, I guess. So, what's it going to be like today? I mean, is there like more energy in your step now, knowing that? I mean, again, Mark Hunt is a legend in the sport, but as you said, Fabricio Werdum is ranked right at the top of the division right now. So, does it almost like pick up the energy a little bit today to know that you got this new matchup?
Actually, yes, it is. It's, you know, I was motivated for five Mark Hunt. I don't think I need any special motivation for, you know, for training. And now as Fabricio comes, it's actually rising. I couldn't imagine that was right, but still I'm really excited and happy to go on each training. So yeah. Actually, it's a great thing for me, for actually, you know, like I get the support from Poland, from Polish fan and everything. They're excited and it's great.
Very cool. What's the schedule from here, Marcin? Are you going to finish your whole camp at Jackson's, or are you going back to Poland? And are you considering, you know, going to Australia a little bit early to get used to that time change and get over the jet lag and all that?
Yeah, I'm going to actually finish the camping here. I'm not planning to go to Poland. I'm just go straight from here to Australia. I think it will be like 10 days ahead at least. So I would use to the climate, because, you know, it's still here is the altitude and everything. So I'm going to the sea level. So that's not a big thing, but still it's a different time, different climate and the food and everything. So 10 days.
Yeah, no, that's smart. It's a long trip over there, man. It definitely gets to you a little bit. So that's smart.
Yeah.
Well, let's just say, I mean, if you beat Fabricio Werdum, I mean, you've been saying since you got to the UFC, you know, I'm not here to just be here. I'm here to be at the very top of the division. I'm here to be a champion. So, I mean, you beat a guy like Fabricio Werdum, man. Are you already in a position where you start talking about, you know, a potential fight with Stipe Miocic? I mean, I know there's other fights that need to happen. You got Ngannou and Overeem. Yeah. I mean, there's other fights that need to happen. But I mean, if you beat Werdum, do you feel like your name should be in that discussion?
You know what? I never talk about what's the future after the fight. I actually like to be focused on my task, which is the nearest in to fight with Fabricio Werdum. But you know, it's he was like a champion like a few months ago. So me beating him would be, I think, nothing left than ask for a title shot. Yeah.
So Marcin Tybura took the fight with Fabricio Werdum, no problem. What a huge change that is, right? I mean, Mark Hunt, Fabricio Werdum, body style, fighting style. I mean, it doesn't get much more different. And I love Tabura's attitude, you know. From the beginning, he said, listen, I'm not here to just be a guy. I'm here to be the guy, and I want to face the absolute best in the world. So I love his attitude, hopefully we'll get to speak to him again once we get down to Australia. So listen, this weekend, not big shows on the map, right? Nothing huge out there, but you do have some smaller shows. Definitely worth taking note. You've got LFA that'll be tonight. That's on Access TV if you're listening on Friday when the MMA Roadshow comes out every single week. Haven't missed a week yet, damn it. Not one. Through vacations, we find a way. Cold coffee in Spain, he still finds a way to get this bad boy edited. We find a way. Cage Warriors will be on Fight Pass. Also, Saturday morning on Fight Pass, you can probably watch the replay if you don't want to wake up super early because it's in China, so it's going to be really early. Antonio Bigfoot Silva is kickboxing against Rico Verhoeven. God bless Bigfoot, man. I applaud him wanting to step in there and test himself. This is a tall order. Tall order. So hopefully he handles himself well. I think the big thing is, though, he can basically take testosterone now. But you can't do under USADA. So that's a plus. I hate to say that. I mean, it sounds like you're saying, cool, he can cheat. But, I mean, he's one of the few guys that has a legit reason. I mean, he's got this pituitary condition. That's why he looks the way he looks. That he actually deserves to take testosterone. So, anyway, I don't necessarily see that one going for him. Again, I don't consider myself the biggest kickboxing fan in the world, but obviously those are two names that you know, and it just doesn't seem to match up well for Bigfoot. But we'll see. We'll see. Upsets do happen, right? Cage Warriors card is out there. Risen will be early in the morning, so there's that out there as well. Venator is putting on a show this weekend. Cody McKenzie is in a single night four-man elimination tournament. Cody McKenzie, I said it recently, I said he's back in Vegas. I've seen him a couple times at Extreme Code Tour, putting in work there. He said, just talked to him briefly. He said, listen, man, I'm moving out here. I want to, you know, I realize I'm in the latter stages of the time I can fight, and I want to do this right. Now, he hasn't been out very long. He literally just got out, so it's kind of one of those things, you know, how much change can you make in a short period of time? And he's fighting some tough dudes over there. We'll see, but if anybody can go in there and do something tough, it's Cody McKenzie. He was the last time he fought over there. I was actually over there. It was one of the last commentary gigs I ever did before I got my commentary banned. Let's not go there. Let's not talk about it. That was May 2016, and he got blasted in the body early on. I'm like, oh, this is not good. He's going down. And then son of a gun, if he didn't fight back and pick up a submission win. He fought again in October. He lost to Joe Riggs. Listen, Cody McKenzie is dealt with his demons. And hell, man, he was drinking the week of the fight when we were over there in Italy in May 2016. So, you know, I don't know if that's something that still haunts him. I didn't talk to him about that. But we'll see. Cody McKenzie is one of those interesting names that's out there. And he's fighting this weekend, so that is out there. That's on a pay-per-view. I think it's about a $10 pay-per-view. We've got a post on that. If you're interested, you got a few bucks and you just want to see something different, there you go. It's there. But things will pick up big time next week. We're going to start getting super busy again. Matt Erickson is actually heading out to Connecticut for Musasi versus Shlemenko. He'll be handling that card. I will be heading to Poland, Gdansk, Poland, for Cerrone versus Till. I like that fight. I know some people question the matchmaking or whatever. I love that fight. We'll talk way more about that next week. My man Abby Saban will be out there. Simon Head is going to be coming out there as well. He's going to be helping us out over there in that European event. So should have some fun over there. And then again, like I said, it just gets busy. The road show finally gets its ass back on the road. I feel like I've been in Vegas so much. But that's going to change. I've been enjoying it, spending time with the family. That's going to change, though. Poland, Brazil, New York for UFC 217. So those are three consecutive weeks there. And then I'll turn it over to Matt Erickson to go handle Virginia for UFC Fight Night 120. And then it just goes on and on. So the end of the year is busy. Unfortunately, Colt Coffey won't be with me next week, but he will be back home. He'll be working. And, you know, we'll just pull together that European squad. Abby Subban, Simon Head, those guys are always good to fill in and get the European angle. I'm sure we'll grab a journalist or two while we're over there and get some takes on what's happening over in Poland. So, anyway, yeah, I guess that's it. I should say, if you like what you're listening, I know this is late in the show, but if you like what you're listening, do me a favor, go to that whole podcast iTunes thing. Yeah. Rate us, review us, all that good stuff. I like the feedback. Hit us up. Leave us a little message in there. What do you like that's good? What do you like that's bad? Tell me. We'll check it out. We'll read it. I promise we will. You could be like Brandon in Louisville. Part of the Holy Trinity of MMA pods, he says. That is strong. Part of the Holy Trinity. He says, I've been listening to, reading John Morgan's coverage of MMA for nearly a decade now. He is the best in the business, and along with MMA Junkie Radio and the co-main event podcast, it is a mandatory download for me every week. Brandon in Louisville, that's what's up. Thank you, sir. I really appreciate that. If you've got nice things to say, go say nice things. If you've got bad things to say, I'll listen to those too. I'll read them. For instance, feedback like this. Gilbert Hill hit me up on Twitter, all right, and he says, he just hit me up today, as a matter of fact. He said, is there a way to have a Twitter Q&A on the road show? It's your show. I love it. I would just love to hear your opinion on MMA topics. And you know what? I've kicked that about. I think we should. Sometimes I just pick topics, but I feel like, posing some questions to you guys. What do you want to hear us talk about? I think we should probably do more of that. I think we should probably, you know, let you hit us up and say, John, here's my question. I want to hear you talk about it. What do you got? Give me a take. We should probably do that. Sometimes I feel like maybe that's lazy. It's like letting, you know, I don't feel like producing the show. I don't feel like picking topics. Let's just let the readers do it. Let's let the listeners do it. I don't want to be lazy. But hell, I appreciate the fact that you're listening. So if there's something you want to hear about, I think you should chime in and let me know. So I told him, I said, you know what? That's a fine idea, Gilbert Hill. Hit me up with something. What do you want to hear about? And here's what he hits me with. There's been talk of a 100-meter race with Woodley, Brunson, and Ferguson. Who you got? Wouldn't an all-MMA fighter skills competition be fun? That's the question he sent me. Gilbert Hill, who I find to be a very fine gentleman on Twitter. I enjoy interacting with this man, talking MMA. I love talking MMA. I really do. This question, come on, man. who would I, 100-meter race between Woodley, Brunson, and Ferguson? I can honestly say I've never seen any of them run. I have no idea what their skills are. Brunson played some football, so maybe he's bigger. He's bigger than all of them, so he'd have the longer stride. I mean, we're only going 100 meters. If we're going, you know, if we're going 100 miles, give me Tony Ferguson all day. He's got insane cardio. But I don't know. You're not giving me a lot of hope for this Twitter segment. No, I'm sorry. Didn't mean to put you down, Gilbert Hill, but that was not the question I was expecting when I said, yeah, throw me something. So I got no good answer there, man. I got no good answer there. But yeah, so if you guys have stuff you want to hear about, hit me up, dude. Let's do it. I don't have no fancy hashtag or anything like that. Just hit me up on Twitter, and we'll find a way to work it in. Russ from Boston actually did have a question. He said, any clue when first quarter 2018 dates and venues will be announced for the UFC? I don't. I'll be honest with you. Life has been a little hectic, and I am not lying. I've shirked in my duties the last couple of weeks trying to handle the personal business that I have that's been going a hell of a lot better as of late. But I'll tell you what, Russ from Boston, I will go find out. I will be beginning next week with plenty of UFC staff members that could probably give me a little insight into how things are looking in the first quarter of 2018. So, you know, it's I will say I would not be shocked if they don't announce quarterly schedules again. I mean, you think about it. Every time they announce quarterly schedule, they haven't had one that's gone perfect. You know, they have to change things. And it's real easy to cancel a date that you never formally announce. You know, maybe you've got a plan on the radar to do an event, and then quietly you just say, we don't really have a main event for there, you know, or things change, and now let's not do that anymore. It's not a big deal if you don't announce it, because the public never knows you're planning on doing it anyway. So you don't have to say, yeah, we canceled that event. Yeah, we scratched that event. If you just never announce it formally, it just goes away and nothing ever happens. If you have to make moves, if you have to make changes, you don't have to promise a city that you were coming to that we promise we'll be back. Sorry about that. So I think it complicates their lives a lot more to announce these things. So I wouldn't be surprised if we don't get those big quarterly announcements. The other thing, too, is, you know, Europe last year was really surprising that we got all those European dates announced. I mean, Gdansk, you know, here this fight at the end of October. I mean, what was this announced back in like April? It's crazy. It seems, I mean, we knew the rest of the year really far in advance. I think that was a Joe Carr initiative. Joe Carr no longer around. He's at the World Surf League. By the way, looking like the sweetest job ever. If you still follow Joe Carr on social media, every picture the dude posts is like him on a beach somewhere. So World Surf League, not a bad gig. Not a bad gig. So we'll see. But again, I'll be not only will be with USC staff, but fortunately, because we do have some international events coming up, we'll be with some of the international staffs, which a lot of times they have more insight on their local markets than maybe even the people in Vegas do. So we'll see if we can get some information on that. So, all right, that was the launch of our first Twitter segment. We'll do more of that. We should do more of that. I guess if I don't be one of those open call, please hit us up with questions, just know, I'm telling you right now, if you want to talk about something, hit me up and we'll talk about it. We'll find a way to work it in. I'll give you my promise. Sound good? Maybe we don't have to make a big deal out of it. It'll just be for us. We'll just know. All right, well, listen, if you are still listening at this point, thank you so much for listening to me ramble all by my damn self. I miss having my man Cold Coffee with me. It'll actually be a couple of weeks before I can have Cold Coffee with me because he's not making the trips, unfortunately, down to or over to Poland or down to Brazil. But, of course, we've got our European team over there that we'll talk to. We've got Fernanda Praches down in Brazil that I'm sure we'll talk to. So we'll get some people on here so you're not listening to me just sit here and ramble. But in the meantime, let me just say thank you to Cold Coffee for editing this all together that I'm about to ship it over to him even while he's on vacation in Spain. That's the kind of dedication he has, not to mention his lack of trust in me. And to everybody else, seriously, thanks for listening.